Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio, and it is the 15th of November 2014. It is a very great pleasure to have you aboard the show today, and we do have a big show lined up for you folks. In the second hour, I have Professor Bob Carter coming on to go through once again in detail some of the biggest reasons why we should be deeply skeptical of the global hysteria over climate change and the measures that are being put in place to allegedly prevent or ameliorate climate change. Bob Carter is a very passionate and sincere climate skeptic who is also a scientist and a man of considerable learning. So that's all coming up in hour two of the show, folks, today. So do stay tuned for the second hour of the show. In the first hour of the show, we are going to be taking a look initially at the G20, which is starting up today in Brisbane. And we have President Obama, the emperor of the New World Order, having arrived in Australia and due to give a lecture at the University of Queensland later today. And I do have on the ground a reporter for Truth News Radio Australia, Marcus Forrest, who's of course the host of Aussie Beach TV, and he's on the line with us right now. Marcus, good morning, sir.
Yeah, how are you, Harold? It's the afternoon down here in Brisbane.
Ah, indeed. And I'm in other climes, my friend. I'm in a remote location. Look, what's the atmosphere on the ground there? How does it feel?
Well, you know, it feels like a really good time for people to come down and express themselves, which is fantastic to see. I'm in Musgrave Park right now in West End, and if anybody knows this park, it's quite large and there's different areas of the park. So there's different setups with different groups, a few people camping in the park in their tents, quite a few vehicles in here. And we've just gone down and done a couple of interviews down there with the African community. And they had a lot to say about what's happening in Africa. And people are just using this this moment in time to express themselves. And because they're on the world stage, they want to be heard. Then often a lot of these groups aren't heard. At the moment, we're in Musgrave Park, as I mentioned, and we're waiting for a few thousand people to arrive in the People's March. And that's starting about a mile or two away over at Roma Street Parklands. And they're expecting it to take about an hour to an hour and a half to get here. But everything's taking longer than expected due to the road closures, the motorcades. And we feel that a lot of the people are trying to move around the city and get to where different protests are happening, but they're being slowed down by the authorities with words like, you have to wait here until the motorcade passes, and then 15 or 20 minutes there's no motorcade, so they take a different, you know, different route to get to where they need to go. So there's a little bit of confusion down here. There's a little bit of, you know, it's not really gelling right now. Yeah. But I'm sure when when that group of protesters arrive here in Musgrave Park, we're certainly going to have a different atmosphere in the next 30 minutes to an hour.
Well, I'm a bit more concerned about that mob that's going to be in the conference centre.
Well, I'm looking over that way right now from Musgrave Park, and of course it's all blocked off with huge, big fences. There are fences running around the entire perimeter. And pretty much on every, you know, corner, every major corner, you can see small groups of police officers with their spanking brand new G20 hats. Gee, they look pretty dapper there. But you know, you tend to sort of feel from a lot of the police that are here today that they've been brought in from rural areas or from the Gold Coast or Sunshine Coast. I believe there's only about 10 police left up in Cairns, and Townsville was the running joke at the moment. And you know, a lot of them are here just doing their job, doing their hours, and you know, getting their bonus paycheck for coming to Brisbane.
Yeah, of course, there's a belief, there's an expectation that these conferences will be used to stage massive protests, which often don't occur. But we're often led to believe that this is the case by the mainstream media and by the preparations, which are almost like, you know, preparing for a war or an invasion, when in fact there really haven't been very significant protests. I mean, occasionally there is violence, but most often that seems to occur from fringe groups who are very dubious in terms of where they actually get their funding from and who actually motivates them. And I know this happened in Toronto a couple of years ago, but Canada is famous for its infiltrated false flag attacks, which are simply used as a pretext for the police to justify the giant security apparatus in the first place.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think, you know, that's the concerns that everybody has. You know, nobody wants this to go sour. We want it to be a good experience and for people to get their opinions heard on the world stage. However, yes, you have these police arriving here and a lot of them look like they really mean business. And here on the Gold Coast, you know, when I'm in the shopping centre, I sometimes take a little look at the newspapers and the frontline headlines. And, you know, one of our frontline headlines was police are out to crush G20 ferals. You know, that's the headlining on the main newspapers here on the Gold Coast.
Is that the Courier Times? You know, is that the Courier Mail?
That may have been Courier Mail. There may have been something along those lines as well in the Gold Coast Bulletin.
Now, I saw one headline. Sorry to interrupt. I saw one headline from the Courier Mail, I think it was yesterday, which was like the entire page, and it said, Vladimir Putin, you must say sorry.
Yes, I saw that one.
What? I mean, this is, of course, Courier Mail is a Rupert Murdoch franchise, and it's one of the nastiest newspapers in the country. But it was just basically using it's like a soapbox of propaganda against the Russian president.
So I wonder what Mr. Putin thought when he saw that headline. When his handler showed him that paper, he must have had a bit of a laugh at it.
Yeah, I mean, sorry about what? It doesn't even say what for. I mean, you know, we're all supposed to automatically know what that means because we think that Vladimir Putin was responsible for shooting down MH17, which is just so infantile. It is so childish. But this is what has happened to the discourse. This is what's happened in the media, is that we're all treated like little babies, and we've all got little baby thoughts, you know, and it's like we are at the level of 6-year-old children in terms of the way we are treated by the mainstream media.
Yes. Well, I think that that's a television rule, is to make your show appealing to 11-year-olds. Yeah. Because that's the only way you get through to people. And you've probably seen from my production that, you know, it's pretty basic. And I've sort of aimed it at teenage boys to understand.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I use the pretty girls and we ask the straightforward questions. We dumb it down a little bit so that people can understand on what's going on. And if you're not... Sometimes if you're not appealing to the lowest common denominator, I mean, that's probably why a lot of people bypass your show, perhaps, with Herald, because it makes them think a little bit too much.
Aussie Beach TV, folks, if you want some relaxed entertainment that just provokes some thoughts, you know, behind the eye candy, you know, don't look further than Aussie Beach TV. Marcus,
yeah, we're down here now with a bikini reporter. And,
fantastic.
Of course, some people aren't always really comfortable with that. We went to talk to some Aboriginal elders and they got a little bit upset and they said, oh, put some clothes on the girl and, the Indigenous community here in Australia, I've never known them to be quite so, you know, ashamed of showing off their bodies as what they were with seeing a part Aboriginal activist bikini reporter here today.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the girl that we're using, you know, has a big Indigenous family.
Okay.
When we are, yeah, so we're down here right now. We're waiting for a few thousand people to arrive into Musgrave Park. Everybody's just sort of waiting in anticipation.
So you're in Musgrave Park. Can you describe for our listeners, where is Musgrave Park in relation to the main events of the conference?
Okay, it's only a stone's throw. I can actually look over towards, you know, just basically one block. I can see the roof of the conference center, of the conference center, I'm sorry.
Okay.
We got the name. I can see that, and then we've got South Bank just on the other side. So I would say I could almost hit it with a stone. I'm about 200 yards away.
So you're a little better off than we were in Sydney in 2007, because I was at the APEC conference in 2007, and it's a long time ago now, but it only feels like a moment ago to me, but the entire city was fenced off, and we had George Bush way down near the Opera House, but all the protesters were kept in Hyde Park, which was several kilometres away. I mean, there was really
yes.
no visual contact. In the APEC conference, there was no connection between the protesters and the conference. It was ludicrous. It was a joke. And yet, despite that, the protesters were all herded into tiny areas anyway, even though they were miles and miles away from the conference. And then at a certain point of the day, about halfway through, the police just decided to clear the park, and they just formed an enormous cordon and just pushed everyone out of the park. I mean, it was total brutality. It was total tyranny what happened on that day. But yeah, it sounds like you're actually a little better off that you're actually a little closer to the action.
Yeah, I expected it to be more like you just portrayed there from the APEC meeting. But, you know, down here, yeah, you can see right where all the dignitaries and, you know, heads of state would be meeting right now, which gives you a feeling you're in amongst it. However, there's a big fence. There's police everywhere. You know, we're looking on the tops of buildings thinking, oh, are there snipers up there right now? And here in the park, you know, there's only a few hundred people waiting for a group of a few thousand to arrive. So I suppose, you know, most of the eyes right now are on that group that are marching here. I'm about to head down with my video camera and get a few little shots. And then as the crew comes in, as everybody comes into the park here, we'll do a few more interviews. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot to say as they do at these protests.
Absolutely. And
I really want to just say out there to everybody who's listening to take a look at Ethan Nash's projects at the moment. He's a young gentleman here from Brisbane who does TOTTnews.com, and he also does the
Excellent.
Australian Roundtable podcast. And he has been working 16 hours a day. He's always on that computer or out in the street talking to people, getting footage, getting interviews done. Then at night he goes back to a little studio where they do the Australian Roundtable podcast, and I just implore everybody to pay attention to what Ethan Nash is doing right now. He's a real trooper. He's working very hard, and he's doing. If I had more time on my sleeve, I would be here 24/7 doing the same thing. But hey, us activists, we all have lives, we all have families, we all have jobs, and we do what we can.
Yeah, and I will certainly endorse your recommendation there. I had a look at Ethan's site, TOTT News. It's .com. Is it .com or .com.au?
Just .com.
.com, TOTTnews.com. Excellent source of information. So, Marcus, you're about to head off. Now, just checking that you're not carrying any prohibited items, do you have any eggs on you?
No eggs.
No and eggs. You don't have any reptiles?
We don't have any reptiles, no, but I have my mullet and we have a bikini girl. Are they okay here?
I'm just looking through the list of banned items. I don't see bikini girls among it.
She's our secret weapon.
Nothing capable of making a loud noise. You have any flotation devices, Marcus? Because they're actually banned.
No, I left my surfboard down on the Gold Coast.
Well, I guess we better let you go, mate. You've probably got a lot to do. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you for your time, Harold.
Okay, thanks, Marcus.
Bye-bye.
You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us, folks.
Men and women of Earth, may I have your attention? This is Harold Fenton, host of Truth News Radio Australia. You're invited to join the info war as we work to restore truth in media and challenge the dark forces which now dominate mainstream news. I'm calling on you, valued listener, to use your hard-earned dollars to help us smash the globalist empire. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe today.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Well, that was Marcus Forrest there from the G20 in Brisbane. And if we hear any interesting news over the next hour or so, we'll be bringing that to you. I'll certainly be updating the website. Of course, the G20 is kind of a platform for world leaders to strut around to talk about very fanciful notions of cooperation. And it's also a vehicle for sort of impressing the rest of us with the might and power of the state. It really is almost kind of a, it's kind of a religion. It's like a pageant, a pantheon. It's reminiscent of the classical era, with you know the great Roman empires and the way that they impressed and threatened the multitudes with great demonstrations of power. But in our current very strife-torn global environment, it's also a platform for the superpowers to clash. And we've seen this incredible propaganda campaign against Russia. And as I was mentioning there earlier, the general public has been infused with certain propaganda themes, such as that Russia and almost Vladimir Putin himself is responsible for the shootdown of the Malaysian Airlines plane over the Ukraine. So we expect to see issues like that highlighted, all in a very crude way. Of course, it's also a platform for all kinds of groups to come out and protest, and some of them are really good and important and genuine. Some of them are provocateurs. Sometimes it's just maniacs who go out and cause violence. And sometimes it's the what I call the sort of co-opted rent-a-crowd activist groups like GetUp, who really are just a front for globalist policy, organizing their minions to go and do idiotic protests like the one we saw in Bondi Beach, where they all put their heads in the sand to shame Australia over climate change. Now, climate change is going to be a big theme of this G20 in the propaganda sense. In the real sense, it's irrelevant. But since China has made its statement in regard to an emissions trading deal with the US, this, of course, is going to be used for huge value to make the Australian government look bad and to make the environmental movements feel like that they are moving forward again. It's a false momentum, of course, because a lot of it is really pure window dressing. But understand that where we're headed with this is that very large corporations, major banks, the ruling oligarchy of this world is intent on creating their schemes of carbon trading and profiting from it, while also marketing their other faux solutions like coal seam gas and windmills and various other things that, again, are money-making schemes. While at the same time, this is an act of repression against people in developing countries who need to develop their industries, who need coal-fired power stations. We'll be getting into a lot of the detail of this socio-political aspect of climate change in the second hour. I'm going to be talking to Professor Bob Carter, as I said, and one of the main things of our discussion will be just this, the way this affects the rest of the world, and particularly the poorer nations of the world. Now, let's just talk for a moment about the much publicised emissions target deal that was struck. between China and the US. Headline here from the ABC from a couple of days ago: China and US agree on ambitious greenhouse gas emissions targets. Now, that all sounds very significant, doesn't it? China and the United States have agreed on a set of ambitious greenhouse gas emission targets, with Beijing setting a goal for its emissions to peak around 2030. It's the first time China, the world's biggest polluter, has set a date for its emissions to stop increasing. And the White House said China would try to peak early. At the same time, the US has set a goal to cut its own emissions of the gases blamed for climate change by 26 to 28% from 2005 levels by 2025. Now, what does that all mean, in fact? You know, well, it means that there's probably going to be a slowdown in the approval of coal-fired power stations. But, you know, setting a goal in itself really doesn't mean much. China says it will look to, and this is a direct quote from the ABC article, China says it will look to increase the non-fossil fuel share of all energy to around 20% by 2030. Now, that's the only solid piece of evidence that they're actually doing anything that's presented in the article. I mean, that's the only statement of action that the Chinese are taking. They're going to look to increase, and I don't even know what look to means. We're going to try, have a go, to increase the non-fossil fuel share of all energy to around 20%. But it's well known that in China, the energy consumption is going up, because China is still growing, developing economically, right? I mean, it still has huge growth. So there is no way China is going to reduce its CO2 emissions. It's unless they start killing a lot of people, right? And as ludicrous as that may sound, don't rule it out. I mean, we've seen the way China tackled population growth with its radical one-child policy, which has led to millions of late-term abortions. And I've got one story here just to highlight the nature of what China as a country does when they decide to adopt measures for the greater good, which are endorsed by other, you know, globalist environmental people who, you know, population growth is one of the key environmental issues warned about by the same people who are very concerned about climate change. It is closely intertwined with climate change, right? And the way China dealt with population growth was just this ruthless totalitarian system of one-child policies. And for families that don't comply, if they're rich, they can just pay a very large fine. If they're poor, the family planning authority comes, kicks down your door, and kicks you in the stomach. Now, this is a story from a couple of years ago, which I'm going to play to you, which was broadcast on Al Jazeera.
These are pictures filmed by Al Jazeera after sneaking into a Chinese hospital. Xiao Aiying would only let us film from the neck down. She is terrified of retribution. Her crime, violating the country's one-child policy. Her punishment, a forced abortion when she was 8 months pregnant.
I had felt the baby moving round and round my belly. Can you imagine how I feel now?
Her husband, also scared, would only speak to us briefly outside the hospital and not...
Okay, we're just going to break. I'm playing you there a clip about forced abortions in China. We'll be coming right back after the break. Don't go away, folks.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Harrywood Fenton. It's great to be with you today. And if you'd like to support the show, if you think this show is doing a good job and you see the need to encourage the development of free alternative media in Australia, can I suggest you get on over to our website at truthnews.com.au and become a subscriber. It'll cost you $65 to become a subscriber for a year. And if you opt to get the T-shirt for the cost of postage, we'll send you the TNRA T-shirt and a lovely little resource DVD that's got some of our best shows and some other free documentaries and films that you might want to share with your friends. And of course, becoming a subscriber, well, you get access to ad-free podcasts. But more importantly, you can know that you've done something positive. You know, it's a bit like what they say with climate change. If you've paid your carbon taxes, you can feel that you've done something positive for the environment. Of course, I'm being sarcastic there. In this case, we really do feel, folks, that we are doing something positive, and it is not some glib little statement like that. I feel that by allowing independent voices to come forward in an environment where it is so difficult, I feel that we are really able to make a difference, and we are able, people are able to have a voice, even though it's still very small and our reach is indeed very small. The potential there is to grow, and of course, if we do get more money in, if we do get more subscribers in, we'll be able to reach more, and money really does drive things in our world. So with money, you can vastly increase the reach and effectiveness of what you do. Without money, of course, you're deeply hampered. I'd just like to return now to the topic that we're covering. And I was talking about China's deal over emissions. And that's, of course, being trumpeted as a wonderful thing. Just like the world did when China brought in its one-child policies. You know, they say, oh, isn't it wonderful? China's concerned about the environment. How marvelous. And you know, the reality is China is a ruthless, brutal, totalitarian regime. And in the name of the greater good, they will murder their own citizens. And they've been murdering the unborn up to, you know, fetuses up to 8, 9 months for decades. This is what they do in the name of population control. And I was playing to you here a clip from an Al Jazeera story. I'll just continue with that. The woman concerned was, I believe she was 7 months pregnant, and they're just at this point talking to her husband.
Out in the open.
There were many men surrounding my wife. They held her arms behind her back, pushed her head against the wall, kicked her stomach, and I don't know if they were trying to give her a miscarriage right there and then.
The police locked her up here and gave her unborn baby a lethal injection. What you're looking at now is Xiao Aiying with a dead fetus still inside her.
The child we do have is 10 years old. She's been feeling my wife's belly as it has grown larger and larger over the month. And my daughter says, I will have a little brother soon. I don't know how I can possibly explain to her what has happened.
What's unexpected about this case is where this took place, in Xiamen. Forced abortions sometimes happen in remote areas of China, but this one occurred in one of the country's most modern cities. In recent years, there have been plenty of mothers who have violated China's one-child policy. They usually pay a fine, anywhere from $1,000 to $40,000, but are then often sterilized to prevent them from having another child.
Just leave it there. That's just to give you a taste of what happens when China takes action on issues like of the greater good, like population growth. I mean, Lord only knows what will happen if China seriously takes action on climate change. Because really, the only way China is going to stop the increase of emissions is if they start killing people. And of course, they can kill people in a variety of ways. It doesn't have to be direct. They can basically just starve people. They can poison people. Or they can withdraw the basic necessities of life. They can shut down power stations. They can drive people into a primitive Stone Age way of life. And that will kill people surely too. Folks, the agenda behind climate change is a very, very dark one indeed. Actually, let's just have a little look about China's history of, or China's policies in regard to crimes punishable by death. Because, again, it's just very important to understand that China is a country that is so far removed from any concept we have about democracy and freedom and the rights of the individual that it has to make your skin crawl. It has to make your spine tingle to hear stories about world leaders, you know, arm in arm with China over deals like climate change. According to Amnesty International, there are 68 crimes punishable by death. Now, among the crimes punishable by death are pimps, embezzlers, livestock rustlers, tax receipt forgers, drunk drivers, yes, drunk drivers, folks, credit card thieves, bicycle thieves, bribe takers, arsonists, drug dealers, spies, thieves, prostitutes, and cultural relic changers. Traders. Of the 68 crimes which are punishable by death, 44 do not even involve violence. People have been executed for tax fraud. People have been executed for embezzling money. And people have been executed, according to news stories, for copyright infringement. I have seen that, although it's a bit hard to find verification of that. But there have been a number of stories about executions over copyright infringement, which again is another case where the West had pressured China to, you know, adopt their measures for the greater good, to protect intellectual property. And China says, okay, yep, we're on board. And so they, you know, they execute a bunch of people. You do not want China coming on board with measures for the greater good, which are endorsed by globalists. That in itself is a very, very, very scary prospect, ladies and gentlemen. So that's just a food for thought there. Just a few more details about China's one-child policy. Since 1979, Chinese couples have been limited to one child by law in order to control a country's population. Families living in rural areas can receive an exemption. Otherwise, couples which have two or more children are required to pay a fine to the government. According to one independent researcher, such fines are common and have become a major source of profit for family planning authorities. In 10 Chinese provinces, authorities are permitted to take remedial measures to ensure that birth quotas are not exceeded. Now, remedial measures is, of course, forced abortions. So, oh yes, and of course, sterilization. That's the other, the final smack in the face. I mean, this is routine in China. Women who have exceeded their quota are routinely sterilized. Now, if we think about the question of global emissions of carbon dioxide, there are many who have openly endorsed sterilization. There are many who've said that the problems of climate change are essentially problems of population. We are moving towards a scenario where sterilization will be on the table in the West. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you. Don't go.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point...
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Well, folks, in the second hour, we've got a very important interview coming up, so that's at the end of this segment. We have Professor Bob Carter coming on the show. He's been on the show several times before. And, of course, last week I had a bit of a rant about the... about the latest IPCC report and the claims about a suppression of historical information from the Department of Meteorology. And Professor Carter will be coming on in the second hour to discuss some of those topics and also, more importantly, to talk about the way in which these policies are really hurting people around the world, but done so in a way that almost makes it look as if it's kindness. I mean, big story today, and this is an article from The Guardian. G20, Obama to pledge up to $3 billion to help poor countries on climate change. Green Climate Fund commitment to be unveiled as leaders gather for G20 summit in hope of spurring others to stump up cash in a move likely to embarrass the host nation, Australia. Yes, because Australia has not contributed to this Green Fund. Of course, Australia, by popular mandate, repealed the carbon tax because Australians know that the whole thing is a bit of a scam. And democracy, briefly, has prevailed in Australia. I say briefly because I don't think it's going to last much longer. I think the forces at work here, with the leader of the free world, as they call him, Barack Obama, now strutting about, talking about climate change. He was in Myanmar yesterday talking about climate change with Aung San Suu Kyi. He stood there with Aung San Suu Kyi, you know, one of the poorest countries in the world, who are desperately in need of real development, talking about how the world is going to act and we have to stop these emissions. Lord only knows what Aung San Suu Kyi thinks about that. She didn't have much to say about it. But it's disgusting and hypocritical. Are words that roll off the tongue rather easily. It's also deeply duplicitous. I mean, when they talk about pledging to a fund to help poor countries, they're not really helping the countries. Let's get this very clear, right? Because what they're doing to these countries is they're shutting down their coal-fired power stations, right? They're hurting them, okay? Get that clear. Get that into your head. They might as well be just hitting people over the head. They might as well be just killing babies. I mean, kicking women in the guts. And that would help too. That would lower the carbon footprint, right? Lowering the carbon footprint does not help people. Killing people lowers the carbon footprint. Hurting people, making people suffer, lowers the carbon footprint. Helping the planet hurts people. Hurting people helps the planet. But now, in your mind, substitute planet for the oligarchy, for the rulers, for the 0.01%, as has been recently announced in a study that showed that the top 0.01% in the United States control 90% of the country's resources and money. 0.01%. So, when politicians stand up and talk about how the world must act, how we must reduce emissions to create a better environment, substitute that, right, for the slaves must be suppressed so that the oligarchy can remain in control and have a better environment for themselves to work in with less threats to themselves. You know, my greatest wish is that as what I'm saying here could reach into the ears, into the hearts of people who are indoctrinated by green philosophy. I know it's possible because I know that one of the great campaigners for climate skepticism, Joanne Nova, was formerly a member of the Greens. And she now runs one of the most important blogs for climate skeptics, which is hugely popular and very popular among scientists as well, joannenova.com.au. Do check it out if you have not. Very, very important website. She's based in Western Australia, in Perth. But the point to make here is that people who are in the Greens are often in the Greens for deep reasons that they want to do something good. They really do want to do something good. However, they have been misled. They have been manipulated. And they have been manipulated in such an egregious way that they cannot even acknowledge it, mostly to themselves, because the cognitive dissonance is so strong and it is so difficult to recognize when you've been misled to such a degree. That's one of the reasons. Another of the reasons is that in the popular mind, the concept of doing good, the concept of helping the world or helping people, is very closely tied to concepts of guilt, which we have actually inherited from the Catholic Church, from the whole Judeo-Christian religion, but particularly the Orthodox traditions, particularly the Catholic Church, which has said that humanity is steeped in sin. Now, I know there are a number of Christians who listen to this show, and I'm quite welcome to hear your input on this, but I do think it's very important to understand that the fake environmental movement is manipulating the guilt sin meme that's deeply embedded in Western religious moral thought. Other commentators have made the analogy between carbon credits and papal indulgences. It is very much the same concept. A papal indulgence was actually like a traded commodity, very much like a certificate, like a carbon credit certificate, which was issued by the church during the late medieval times, that would allow people a certain amount of sin, right? You were allowed to commit a certain number of sins, and you paid money, right? And that basically absolved you of the consequences of those sins. So just as today we're seeing the system whereby people can buy licenses to produce carbon dioxide, which is a sin. So a couple of things to understand there about that is that the system of thought that all this exists within is actually medieval. It doesn't partake of the Enlightenment. It doesn't. It's not an enlightened modern scientific way of looking at the world. It's an ancient medieval feudal way of looking at the world, which is deeply entwined with the guilt-laden history of European Christian society, which, of course, has been an incredibly powerful mechanism for control in itself. I mean, when you have people indoctrinated from birth to believe that they are essentially evil, that they must constantly be asking for forgiveness because they're constantly sinning, you have a population that is very, very easy to control. Now, of course, I'm not refuting that there is wickedness, that there is sinfulness. I think these things are real concepts, but they're concepts that have been manipulated by the power structures of the church simply for the purpose of controlling people. And, of course, that can be described as the greatest sin of all, and a far worse sin than the venal sins of the average person. And so if you compare that to the overarching authorities, the overarching financial oligarchies that are engineering universal carbon taxes, I mean, the wickedness and sinfulness of what these people are doing is, I mean, it makes us all look like absolute innocent babes by comparison. I mean, whatever you've done, I mean, even if you're a serial killer and you've killed 50 people, what these people are doing, what these people are engineering, is capable of killing millions or billions of people. I know that's an extreme claim, but in the second hour, Bob Carter, professor and paleoclimatologist, will be coming on to talk about some issues related to that very topic. So we are at the end of the hour. We've got a news break coming up for those listening on the radio network, and then we will be back to bring you more of the same. So Truth News Radio Australia, just stand by, and another great hour coming right up.